Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Bring a little sunshine indoors with the exciting new arrivals in store or online at harrycurry.com.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer in store or at harrycurry.com.
0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. Deirdre McCormack has contacted us from the UK. Deirdre, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you? Did you see the Bishop Eamon Casey documentary?
I did last Monday night. Yes, I did. It was appalling. Absolutely appalling.
And you contacted us to tell your story and what you did. Go ahead, Deirdre. Appreciate it.
What do you want me to sort of tell us a story?
Tell us about this priest that was your next of kin.
Well, this priest, his name was Canon Dermot Fogarty. Mm-hmm. He was my mum's first cousin. My mum was dead many years.
Okay.
He was very, very close to my family. He used to come and stay with us on holidays. I was always on the phone to him. Used to go down and visit him. Then he lived to a great age. He was 92 when he died. He was one of the very senior priests in Arundel and Brighton Diocese before Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor became cardinal. He'd been Bishop of Arundel and Brighton Diocese. Mm-hmm. And Canon Fogarty had been his very close advisor, very eminent canon lawyer. So he died in 2012. He had a massive stroke. I spent the last few weeks of his life sitting for quite lengthy periods of time at his bedside. Then they had a massive funeral for him, very, very similar to Casey's. I mean, when I actually got the photographs of his funeral out last weekend and counted, there were 65 priests at his funeral. There was the Bishop of Arundel and Brighton, Bishop Conry, Auxiliary Bishop from Southwark, Bishop Tripp, and Cardinal Cormac Murphy O'Connor. It was a 3-day event.
Wow.
He'd been chaplain of a care home run by nuns, so they had a requiem, his coffin laid in the chapel there. He had a requiem mass there. Then the following day, the coffin was brought in procession through the street to the parish church. That was a Sunday. The Sunday evening, there was a requiem mass for people that couldn't attend on the Monday. And then on the Monday afternoon, there was a funeral with, you know, all I can describe is all the works with the bishops and everybody there. So it had been a 3-day event.
Okay.
I was closely involved. They were sort of consulting with me. I saw a copy of the sermon beforehand and everything. They told me what readings. They discussed hymn choice with me. So I then paid for his headstone and thought a fitting place would be the seminary at Wanish, because he had taught there for many years. Got in touch with the rector. Yes, absolutely fine.
Okay.
So the wording I chose was a priest much loved by his family and all who knew him.
Okay.
So we then fast forward to 2018, and I discover a book has just been written by an Oxford academic called Dr. Stephen Bernard, detailing all his abuse by Canon Fogarty. I was like absolutely aghast. I mean, I got the book, I read it in a couple of days, I read it 3 times, and I was like, what on earth is going on here? Because it turned out that Dr. Bernard had disclosed his abuse to the diocese 6 weeks before Canon Fogarty died. So I was like, what on earth are they thinking of conducting a funeral like this? And why didn't they tell me? You know, I had no choices. So I felt that I'd been sort of, unknowing, the lack of information it sort of put me in a position where I made a decision that I wouldn't have made.
Mm-hmm.
I wouldn't have had any, you know, they'd have had to have just decided how to bury him themselves. I wouldn't have paid for any headstone.
Well, as you know, in the Bishop Eamon Casey case, now both of them went to their graves without facing without facing any charges. So obviously they were never convicted if they ever faced any charges. Mm. But both of them, it now seems, in your case, you say 6 weeks beforehand, and Arundel and Brighton, that diocese was not without its controversies, as you know, in terms of abuse by priests and indeed cover-ups, very similar to what happened here.
Absolutely.
But the Irish Church knew that Bishop Eamon Casey had been removed from public ministry for nearly 17 years. Not 6 weeks, 17 years prior to his passing. Mm. Now, what was it about Dr. Stephen Barnard's book that was so convincing? And I know he's been interviewed and it's been described as a powerful memoir of sexual abuse and a very brave book, and he's tried to get on in his life. But the litany of abuse he suffered at the hands of your relative, Dermot Fogarty. By the way, is there any Irish connection there in the name Dermot Fogarty?
Oh, yes. He was actually, sorry to break it to you, his mother came from Cork. His dad came from Donegal. Yeah. He was born in County Cavan, and his dad was a teacher, and they moved to England because he'd asked for an increase in his salary and it was refused. So they came, it was really financial reasons that sent them to England. But I mean, you know, his mother and the Cormac Murphy O'Connor family had been friends back in Cork.
Okay, which is where Murphy O'Connor family is from, And Cardinal Murphy O'Connor subsequently apologised for his role in other cases.
Yeah, where, there's Michael Hills, notorious.
Who he moved from one diocese to another after very credible and, as happened, true allegations were made. Now, Dr. Stephen Barnard, he's at Oxford. He's a literary classic as well-known academic. But he said that the abuse by Dermot Fogarty began when Stephen was 11.
That's right, and it went on for 4 years. Canon Fogarty was offered in private tuition in Latin and French, and so Stephen was going to the presbytery, and the family weren't particularly well off. And Stephen had a younger sister, and Canon Fogarty arranged for her to have either, I'm not sure whether it was free schooling or reduced fees at the local private convent. So that was the hold over Stephen. You know, if you say anything, your sister won't, you know, be able to continue her education at the convent.
Yeah.
Pretty, really dirty, rotten trick.
And you were in no doubt when you read this, even though you held this man, and you were next of kin. You were the one who picked the hymns and the read. You held this man in high regard up until the day he died.
How can I put it? I mean, I'm an abuse survivor myself.
Okay.
You just couldn't make it up.
Yeah.
You know, it's one thing to say that, you know, he's been abused, but the detail, it just struck such a chord with me. It resonated, the detail, his responses, everything. It was just so much the way, you know, an abuse survivor responds.
And Dr. Stephen Barnard, obviously, he's older now, but he writes, I was reading reviews of the memoir earlier on, he writes of the effect it had on him in terms of trauma and medication. And
when you read the book, he's had several suicide attempts. And I mean, one of the things that I think is most appalling is that Canon Fogarty would take him up to his bedroom, rape him. Canon Fogarty's bedroom in the presbytery, and then bring him downstairs, sit him next to him on the settee, and make him say his confession. How do you process that as a child?
And when you picked the words for this headstone.
Yeah.
And what were the words again? Much, what was it? Much loved.
A wise priest, much loved by his family and all who knew him.
Yeah. I was trying to find out at the weekend. I was down in Galway and I went into Galway Cathedral, and obviously you can't go down into the crypt. But I was trying to find out what the inscription is on Bishop Eamon Casey's coffin, because there is a plaque on his coffin, and it looks more than, from what I could see from photographs, it looks more than simple R.I.P.
Bishop Casey, I know, on the
looking at archive footage of the funeral. On the photograph that was on the coffin was simply titled, obviously, by the church, Bishop Eamon. But he held his title right to the end, and he held his first name as if it's a vuncular tones, Bishop Eamon. Now, you decided that this headstone should not stand. And what did you do?
Well, what I did was I wrote to the rector at the seminary at Walnut. Now, he was the man I contacted, you know, when I wanted him, you know, to see if we could bury him there. And he'd been lovely. He said that he'd have to pass it to safeguarding.
Okay.
So I'm like, this is my... The headstone was my property because I paid for it.
Okay.
So why has safeguarding got to be involved? So he gave me the contact details of somebody at safeguarding. So I said, no, I wanted to speak to the bishop.
Okay.
So sort of arranged a meeting with the bishop and sort of raised the whole bit, you know, told him what I wanted. And I'd said in the letter, in the email that I'd sent to the rector, which... by then the bishop had got, and I said that I wanted the headstone demolished, and I raised with him why I hadn't been told at the time. Now,
okay.
By then, the bishop had changed. At the time of Canon Fogarty's funeral, the bishop was a man called Kieran Conroy, who actually, about 2 years after that, had to resign because he had an affair with a married woman.
Okay.
So by then, the bishop was Bishop Richard Moth.
So how did you, because as you know, the church in Galway, the Diocese of Galway, even though they know all this, even though they've reached out, they say, to victims and saying they would be empathetic, and they clearly believe what Patricia Donovan was saying, they've decided to put it on the back burner. They say this is the diocese requires time. I don't know what the diocese means. Does that mean the people of the diocese or but they say the diocese as if it's a human entity. The diocese
To go off into round. Remember at ICSA in this country, that there was a man in safeguarding, a lovely man actually, and he talked about the church's labyrinthal structures and how things. I mean, basically, it'll just meander around on a piece of paper for goodness knows how long.
It says the diocese requires time and space to consider and consult on the interment of Bishop Eamon Casey in the cathedral crypt. In this context, the interment of the remains of Bishop Casey in the crypt beneath Galway Cathedral is a very sensitive issue that deeply affects people in different ways and which has different facets. Well, the callers last week to our programme were unanimous that they believed
he should be.
The interment of Bishop Casey in the cathedral crypt now requires a period of careful consideration and consultation.
Mm.
What do you think of that?
Me.
Time and space are required.
Well, I mean, at the time, because I'm an abuse survivor myself, so I know other abuse survivors, and a couple of people said to me, Deirdre, was it a difficult decision? I said, no. I said, it was almost... the situation was so bad. It was like I had a driving force inside me, compelling me. I knew, you know, when you know something is wrong, you want to put it right. And this is glaringly, obviously wrong. And I've got to say, you know, the church's reputation is so tarnished. This is actually a really good opportunity for them to actually sort of rebuild some trust. you know, if they came out this week, and I mean, even, I mean, in a lot of ways, I think what would be, you know, for their own sake, because the one thing they obviously don't want is throngs of people outside the cathedral as the coffin gets taken out. I would say they need to very quietly, probably in the dead of night, choose a pouring wet night at about 3 o'clock in the morning, get the coffin out, take it off to an crematorium somewhere, you know, somewhere else way away in the country, get him cremated and get his ashes scattered, I think at sea would be brilliant, like the lady suggested last week, and then issue a statement.
Now, Deirdre, and you then proceeded, and there is images, and I'll tweet them during the break. There's images that you had the headstone destroyed.
Yes, yes.
With a sledgehammer. I mean,
what happened was that the diocese said they agreed. They were in a very difficult situation because I owned the headstone.
Of course, yeah.
And I mean, that's the difference with Eamon Casey. The family probably didn't pay for the coffin.
That's true. I'd say everything was paid for by the church.
Yes. And I mean, obviously at the time, I mean, I paid for it because I was like, well, this is what you do with a member of your family. You don't, it would have almost felt like charity that if the church did it. When you lay.
But Deirdre, just as you mentioned that, did you pay for any other element of Dermot Fogarty's funeral?
No, everything okay. else, no. I mean, there was a reception afterwards and he'd quite specifically said that he wanted that paid for out of his estate. Okay. And I would imagine the coffin came out of his estate because I went to the undertakers with one of the nuns that was running the care home where he was chaplain. And I actually, you know, and they were producing brochures and I just said to them, when his mother died, she told him not to waste money on an expensive coffin. It was only going to rot in the ground. And I said, what's good enough for his mother, I think is good enough for him. So we'll just go for a cheap coffin. I would imagine that came out of his estate. His mum was a very down-to-earth lady.
And who decided on this idea of taking a sledgehammer to it and insisting, I think you did, and insisting.
That was me.
And why? Why a sledgehammer?
Because I didn't want it left propped up somewhere with the words on it. I wanted, you know, those words destroyed because, you know, they were so insulting to Stephen Bernard.
But why didn't you simply have the headstone removed, as you say, in the middle of the night? You had it physically crushed by a sledgehammer to smithereens. I'm just trying to work out, was that important to you, Deirdre?
Yeah, because it was still intact. And I guess the question, you know, obviously I wasn't going to be able to put it in the back of my car. If it wasn't destroyed, what was going to happen to it?
Okay.
You know, the wording is part of the honour, you know. So I felt it needed to be destroyed to kind of destroy the honour because the honour was so misplaced.
And what do you think, by the way, what was the reaction to that? Because it was on national television in the UK, Deirdre. Did you get any reaction?
Well, I did. I mean, in this sort of survivor world, I got a lot of very, very positive feedback. Mm-hmm. And I didn't really get anything sort of negative. I did see somebody put something up somewhere on Facebook. I don't see the point of this. And I thought, well, you actually don't understand about abuse at all. You don't understand about the impact of it. You know, the terrible, terrible damage it does to people's lives.
And when you were, when you watched the documentary with Patricia Donovan, as Patricia said, for so many years she was not believed.
Mm. And you know, if you believe something is wrong, something's been done that's wrong, you want to put it right. That's justice. And, you know, sort of if you just look at Jesus, you know, when, you know, the woman where they were throwing the stones, he went to her aid to protect her. You know, it's sort of, that's what Christianity is, isn't it?
Yes, it's, and what do you think? And Patricia herself, as far as I know, hasn't spoken about, and she is a relative as well, like you, of this abuser. And she, as far as I know, she hasn't spoken or given. Maybe it's unfair to ask her opinion of this.
Well, she talked about, didn't she? She talked about how sick she felt, and how she nearly took her own life when she saw the funeral.
That's true. That's true. That's true.
So, I mean, yeah.
And in Eamon Casey's case, I know in your case, you'd almost the same number of priests, 60 plus. Eamon Casey had 11 bishops. But he also had the President of Ireland in attendance, who was obviously, like you, unaware of any of those allegations. But anyway, stay with us, Deirdre. Joe at rt.ie, 51551 is the text number, and 0818 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I take your point about Deirdre. By the way, I'm talking to Deirdre McCormack, who contacted us from the UK. Deirdre was listening to the programme, also watched the TV documentary on Bishop Eamon Casey. Deirdre was in the position that her next of kin, she was next of kin to a high-ranking priest, Canon Dermot Fogarty, of the Diocese of Arundel and Brighton, where Bishop Eamon Casey also served at one stage. And when he passed away, Deirdre, as next of kin, was asked by the church what she would like in terms of hymns and the order of service. It was a very florid ceremony in terms of representation from the church, 60 priests, many bishops, and Cardinal Murphy O'Connor, who was a close family friend. And but then Deirdre discovered through a book written by a man called Dr. Stephen Bernard, and it was a very strong book which received very, very strong and positive reviews in the UK. This is from The Guardian. A powerful memoir of sexual abuse. It's called Paper Cuts by Stephen Bernard. He was abused from the age of 11, and he was attacked by Dermot Fogarty, I think, over 300 times, Deirdre. Deirdre then read this book. I'm just bringing people up to date. And then you were so horrified by this. And the effect it had on Stephen Bernard, as the effect that, as we know, abuse has on so many people in terms of, I know different people react different ways, but his unwellness, his mental unwellness, his various challenges, he put it all down to that episode of what, nearly 5 years being abused by your relative Dermot Fogarty, and then Deirdre decided she wanted the headstone removed. Now you are, and I've tweeted out during the break, the headstone being demolished with a sledgehammer. Were you actually there, Deirdre?
Yes, yes, I was. Yeah, I told the bishop I wanted to be there.
Who was wielding the sledgehammer?
The diocese got somebody in to do that.
Was that a grave digger or an undertaker? Or?
I think that
it doesn't matter. Yeah. Okay, take. And then you also asked for it to be filmed, and I think you informed news channels, and they came along. Why did you want it filmed?
Well, I think it was showing what people could see what had happened. I think part of it was for people to actually really think about, you know, the impact of abuse, that, you know, how important it is that actually we respond, you know, appropriately, how inappropriate the diocese had responded. And I mean, it's the same, you know, with Casey. You know, they seem to sort of think they can just kind of play ostrich and, you know.
Well, as I say, the diocese have asked, even though they've known about this for many years, it seems, the diocese have asked for time and space for a period of reflection and careful consideration and consultation on what should happen next.
I'm at a loss for words why they ever even thought it was appropriate to put him there, because it's putting him on a par with the other bishops that are there.
Yeah, I think there's only four other people interred. It's a pretty impressive crypt, as you can imagine, of marble and mahogany in a pretty impressive cathedral, I can tell you as well. Paid for primarily. I know they got money from America and money from Cardinal Cushing, but paid for primarily by the people of diocese, who for 6 years, Deirdre, 6 years in the late 50s, early 60s, at a time of great poverty in Ireland, every Sunday, as well as their offering in church, they had to, I won't say they had to, but it was quite clear in the booklet written by Archbishop Michael Brown that I read last week, and I read out pieces of it here. Every family in every parish in the Diocese of Galway, they had to submit an envelope every week. There was three parishes were exempt, Deirdre, and the reason why they were exempt, I presume they were rural parishes, they didn't even have churches of their own, so I presume. But anyway, every parish for 6 years, every Sunday, submitted an envelope, as well as their church offerings, by the way, of 2 and 6 pence for 6 years, which was a lot of money, a half a crown. Days.
I was a child in those days. I mean, 2 and 6 was a massive amount of money.
Yeah. But if you don't mind me saying so, Deirdre, you're extraordinarily strong. You said you were abused yourself. So I want to ask you this next question. Why, when you said about Eamon Casey, you said he should be taken out of Galway Cathedral in the dead of night, he should be cremated, and his ashes should be scattered over the sea.
Why? That's what a lady proposed last week. I thought, yes, you're spot on. Because, you know, somebody suggested Maynooth, but I thought, then he's in another kind of special place. You know, if you think about the people that phoned in last week, the desperately tragic stories, I mean, absolutely horrifying, of little babies that, you know, weren't allowed to have a funeral, priests refusing them. You know, look at all those babies in Tuam with no mark grave, innocent children, you know. They've got no honour. Okay. You know, they're sort of like treated as though they are so unimportant. And then this man that has committed these terrible crimes to, you know, Patricia when she was a vulnerable child.
Five.
And to other people. You know, what the hell's going on that he gets all this honour? I mean, the message it sends out is so skewed. It's not true.
And the Galway Diocese said, we will not be making any further comment until we are in a position to provide an update. We need time and space for careful consideration and consultation. Now, the other tough... Deirdre, did you... In having the headstone demolished and having it sledgehammered, were you assuaging... Did you feel any way guilty that you were party, even though you had no knowledge of, you were party to this magnificent send-off?
I didn't, but I felt I would have been if I'd done nothing. You know, I'd say there are some survivors, a group of clerical abuse survivors in this country, survivors of abuse by the Comboni Fathers, and they have a phrase that they use quite regularly: doing nothing is not a neutral act. Doing, you know, if you do nothing when you're faced with wrongdoing, you're ignoring. And I think I would. I hadn't heard the phrase at that stage, but I still felt it. You know, if you, you know, if you look, you're basically looking the other way. You know, okay. It's like the story of the Good Samaritan. You know, the priest and the Levite. You know, walk across the road, so they don't need to deal with it. And it's the Good Samaritan that helps. It's the same thing.
And I've now access to the book you're talking about. Did you ever meet Stephen Bernard? I know he's a very private individual.
No.
Okay.
No.
Okay.
Yeah. But I mean, we did correspond.
Okay. Stephen, he's an English academic. He's based in Oxford, and his speciality is literary correspondences from the 16th century. But he's a reviewer for the Times. Literary supplement. He says paper cuts is my first and only experiment in autobiography. These are some of the reviews from our own Roddy Doyle, the Irish writer. What a book. Chilling, riveting, extraordinarily wonderful. I'm trying to think of words to describe this book, but none of them do it justice. From Hilary Mantel, she said, I've never read such a succinct and unsparing chronicle of the destruction of body and spirit that can be brought about by the violation of a child. It's the equivalent of a letter from a gulag, except that the events took place in Sussex in the 1980s. The saving grace is the writer's pleasure in scholarship and his undaunted eye for the beauty of the world. The Observer said at the newspaper, it's an extraordinary book in its unblinking truthfulness, even more so in its refusal to deny the complexities and ambiguity that follow such childhood trauma. And the Times Literary Supplement, compelling, Bernard lays rightful claim to the role of truth-teller to construct a historical document that would enclose the trauma and allow him to get on with living my life. Now, if I just can, because people would not, including myself, did not hear about this man and this issue until you brought us to our attention over the last couple of days. But one thing I note from his notes before the book, in the book, the names of the people have been changed, apart from those of myself, my family, my therapist, who he's very grateful to by on a number of occasions throughout the book, Dr. Richard Gipps, a significant literary figures. And he said, obviously, I've not changed, and most importantly, that the name of my abuser, Cannon T.D. Fogarty.
Yeah, he was Thomas Dermod, actually. That's why it's T.D.
Okay. This book was largely written over a period of 6 weeks during a course of trauma therapy with Dr. Gipps. The statement printed in this book is a redacted version of the actual statement I made to Sussex Police. My benchmark in writing this book was to be as honest as I could. I wrote it for myself, but I share it with you now. Without honesty, we are nothing in the world, or not much. I hope that comes across. To be accountable for oneself and one's conduct are, to me, the most important tests one can set it's oneself in life. What a beautiful writer this man is. And then there's this photograph of Stephen Bernard, obviously he's at the age of 12, which is, I will read it tonight, but it's a very powerful piece.
It's a very powerful piece.
Okay, stay with us, Deirdre. We're talking about Canon Dermot Fogarty, originally from Cavan, died with the full honours of the church and the full panoply of honours of the church. Ironically, his headstone was erected by his next of kin, who is speaking to us now, Deirdre McCormack. And she had the headstone literally sledgehammered when she read of his abuse. At her insistence, she had it done. And she's been listening to Liveline and indeed Buried Secrets and indeed Patricia Donovan. And you are calling for the remains of Bishop Eamon Casey, which are resting in the crypt of Galway Cathedral, to be removed. Now, a slightly different issue, but not without a context. Des O'Halloran. Des, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Joe.
Explain the memorial that you're upset by.
The memorial has been placed in recent weeks at the location of a former industrial school in Tralee in County Kerry.
Okay.
And it, to me, has a very strange wording. because it says to acknowledge the children who passed through the doors of St. Joseph's Industrial School in 1870. And, you know, the purpose of a memorial or any public notice is to inform. But what does it tell us? Nothing. And like your earlier speaker said,
Deirdre
said that being neutral is not an excuse of doing nothing, because it's disrespectful. They're sheepishly kind of saying that there was an issue here, but they're not really telling us there was an issue. So I feel that either if you have a plaque, it should be explicit, or don't put anything, because it's not satisfactory to say something that tells us that there was a school, there were children, and there were walls. That's what the sign says. So you really have to find out what's this about. And I feel that that's not the right way to go.
And have you raised your concerns, Des?
I haven't. I've passed it numerous times, and I just, you know, more and more times I pass it, I feel that it's just unacceptable. And I was going to write to the county council, and I just said popped a little letter off to the local newspaper, and they picked it up from there. And ultimately, you've contacted me. You know, it's one of these institutions of which there were approximately 50. Between mother and baby homes, industrial schools, reformatories, all of which attracted attention of numerous journalist investigations and state probes. And there was a very explicit apology issued by the Taoiseach back in 1989 following the Ryan report. And
then were you aware, to come back to the fact that that Deirdre, she picked the words on the headstone, which she subsequently had destroyed, of Dermot Fogarty. Was anyone, as far as you know, aware of the wording that the council were going to put up?
No, I'm not aware. I'm not aware of anything, any discussion, presumably within council meetings. Perhaps it was discussed amongst the local politicians, but I certainly knew nothing of it until it appeared.
To acknowledge, and it reads, to acknowledge, as you said earlier, to acknowledge, just to remind people, to acknowledge the children who passed through the doors of St. Joseph's Industrial School between 1871 and 1970 century, erected by Kerry County Council. It's as if, it was a playground or something. To acknowledge the children who passed through the doors, or a hotel, or a creche.
There's no context. Why are we doing that? So,
Just invites more questions.
Absolutely. They could have changed it slightly to acknowledge the mistreatment of the children who passed through the doors. Then we'd know what they're referring to. Or even quote something from the actual government apology of the day. Stated that, you know, on behalf of the people of Ireland, you know, we acknowledge that we failed to recognise, to identify, and to rectify their difficulties. Powerful.
And we contacted Kerry County Council, and they said the plaque was placed at this location, further to requests from the elected members in Tralee Municipal District over the course of recent years. The wording was agreed with the elected members, who reflected the views of some of the survivors of the regime. Interesting, they use the word regime in their statement. At St. Joseph's, and they don't use it on the plaque, at St. Joseph's Industrial School. For reference, below was the notification which was issued in advance of the unveiling, and it's a press statement from the Tralee Municipal Council. Councillor Terry O'Brien, Mayor of Tralee, members of Tralee Municipal District will unveil a plaque to mark the location of St. Joseph's Industrial School at a ceremony this weekend. The plaque will be unveiled at 10:30. The memorial plaque follows agreement between the elected members of Tralee Municipal District that the site of the industrial school be acknowledged and identified in this way. But apparently in a speech at the opening, Terry O'Brien, the mayor of Tralee, acknowledged the immense pain and suffering of many of those who attended the school, but this is not referenced, as you say. The statement itself uses the word the regime, even, which has its own connotations. But the plaque says to acknowledge the children who passed through the doors of St. Joseph's Industrial School 1871 to 1970. Is it enough that it says that it was remembered? Is that a start, as the fellow said?
Well, I think it probably is appropriate that, it was a very dark passage in our social history, as was many other institutions. But if you're going to actually refer to it, or put a memorial there, there should be something that refers to the fact that this whole thing was a sad episode and that these people suffered. Now, there's no indication there of what happened and why it's there.
And as you say,
there is no context.
And the government apology, which was delivered by... Yeah. There were so many apologies in those years. And there were so many necessary apologies.
Bertie Ahern's one was the key one in May 1999.
Yeah. And there's enough... There's enough in Taoiseach Bertie Ahern's speech. Yeah. It was a fine, fine speech. There was enough to offer up a quote, wasn't there? There really
was.
A good... Okay, stay with us. Stay with us, Des. Stay with us. Deirdre, have you a view on that wording? Here was a notorious industrial school. People suffered, young people suffered savagely over the course of a century. And the plaque put up in the last few weeks reads, to acknowledge the children who passed through the doors of St. Joseph's Industrial School.
It says nothing, does it? I mean, I agree with Des. I think it's almost worse to put up something that says nothing than to put up nothing at all. There needs to be an acknowledgement. And I mean, although I live in England, I do know, I've met a couple of survivors of industrial schools, and my goodness, they went through, I mean, to say hell is the understatement of the year. Mm-hmm. I don't think they described their experience as passing through a school.
Yeah, and as I say, I only came across Stephen Bernard's memoir when it was pointed out to me in your communication with us. And very early in the book, he describes the forced attack on him by... I couldn't read it out without giving people 10 minutes warning. But he does say it's shocking. It's shocking and it's violent.
Oh, yeah. The level of violence is horrific. Absolutely horrific.
He says he felt he was being strangled, by the way. He was going to die. And he said there is a limit to evil, though it may not feel... like there is. Stay with us. We'll be back after this break. Joe at rt.ie 51551 0818 715 815.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. Experience summer comfort for less. Explore our sale on curtains and bedding. Perfect time to update and freshen your home.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
As I said, we're contacted by Deirdre McCarthy, a listener in the UK, but also the next of kin of a prolific clerical abuser of children. Who was unmasked in no uncertain terms after his death, unfortunately, though the diocese were aware of the allegations 6 weeks before he passed, and Deirdre obviously is reacting to the conversations about Bishop Eamon Casey. But Deirdre went a step further. She had the headstone on the grave of her next of kin, Dermot Fogarty. She had it actually demolished. And she's also arguing that the remains of Bishop Eamon Casey be removed from its exalted position in the crypt of Galway Cathedral. Now, Galway Diocese have issued what can only be described, I think, as a meditative statement, a floating statement, a gentle statement of lightness, and the same, we need time and space. The diocese requires time and space to consider and consult on the interment of Bishop Eamon Casey in the cathedral crypt. It's a very sensitive issue that deeply affects people in different ways, which has different facets. So the interment of Bishop Eamon Casey in the cathedral crypt now requires a period of careful consideration and consultation, which has begun. But in the meantime, the remains lie underneath those who attended services in Galway Cathedral since, and in the documentary, as Deirdre pointed out, Patricia Donovan said when she discovered the nature of Bishop Eamon Casey's funeral, the offering and the participation of 60 priests, 11 bishops, the presence of the President of Ireland, Michael Lee Higgins, obviously totally unaware of the allegations against Casey at that stage. And Patricia said when she heard this, she was became very, very unwell, as she explained in the documentary. And we had people last week saying they will never darken the door of Galway Cathedral. And I did darken the door of Galway Cathedral last Sunday. The 12:30 Mass was on. It struck me. First of all, it's a magnificent building, though I see the architectural controversy. On the one hand, it's a mixture of it's a mixture of periods. On the one hand, the ceiling, which is the roof, the inside of the roof is a vaulted, beautiful wooden roof, like you'd see in an abbey. That's absolutely magnificent. The stonework is all local stone. It is the biggest building in Galway. It dominates the Galway skyline from anywhere you stand in Galway. In any photograph or tourist leaflet, including from the state body, Fáil to Ireland, they encourage visits to this cathedral. But two things struck me. One was how beautiful it is inside, how big it was inside. And two, I would be clear in saying, as I stood there, that the vast majority of people who were at the 12:30 Mass last Sunday were not born at the time of Bishop Eamon Casey. And I'd say the vast majority of them, they're all Irish citizens, I presume. But I'd say a lot of them, which I know the church in Ireland is dependent on now, I don't think a lot of them were born in Ireland in that sense, and they are absolutely and totally welcome to our country and part of our country. So I don't know how many of them, I suppose that's my point, I don't know how many of them would know about Bishop Eamon Casey. Marie Murphy, Marie, you're listening to Deirdre McCormack.
I am indeed, and she's absolutely excellent. And I agree with everything that she has said. There's no two ways about it. And I do think that Eamon Casey should be taken out of the cathedral. At the end of the day, I listened to the programme all last week and it never struck me to ring in at the time. Mm-hmm. But what in the name of God was the Catholic Church thinking of? Sending him out to the missions where there were hundreds, if not thousands, of vulnerable little children that could have been abused. I mean, he must have felt like a child in a sweet shop. That was more like a reward to him than a punishment. That's how he must have felt about it. And that's what really rattled my cage when I thought about it. I thought, that is bloody disgusting. And I'll be honest with you, Joe, I am a practising Catholic. You know I'm from Ballyfermot, not too far from your mum's, your late mum's, Lord Rester. Yeah. And like, I go to Mass and whatever, and I'm involved in the church and all the rest of it. But by God, do I feel totally and utterly betrayed. You know, like, I mean, these people are getting up and they're preaching to you, me and the dogs in the street and whatever. You do this and you don't do that. And then they go and do the total and complete and utter opposite. I mean, it's absolutely hideous. Like, who in the name of God in the Catholic Church takes these decisions?
Well, the Diocese of Galway, they say the diocese requires time and space to consider and consult on the interment of Bishop Eamon Casey. The cathedral crypt is a sensitive issue that deeply affects people in different ways, which has different facets.
Well,
it needs careful consideration and consultation. So why not...
Consultation with whom? What are they going to take a vote on with the citizens down there? Like, I mean, what do they mean, consultation? Who's consulting whom? When you think about it, who's going to ask whom? Like, are they going to go out and get RTE or reporters to go down and say, you know, what do you think? What do you think? And take a general figure on it. Like, how are they going to consult with the people, Joe? Okay. Well, that's the question I would ask.
I think basically what they're saying is, we have the power And we are the ones who will. We are the ones who will decide. Yeah. We are the ones who will decide how we will decide, and we will not be making any further public comment until we decide how we decide and what we decide. Mary, well, stay there, Mary. Stay there, Mary. Mary Keating, 51551 is the text. Mary, you're listening to Deirdre and her very vivid description of the destruction of Dermot Fogarty's headstone. Your point, please, Mary.
Hello, Joe. Well, I'm making a more general point. Okay. I'm not going to comment in detail on any of the, you know, the stories that are unfolding. But I just think the general point I want to make is that I think we are going a very dangerous road if we are going to decide as human beings, you know, who is going to be removed from their grave, whose tombstone is going to be knocked down. We are making judgments that are not within our capacity as human beings. And we are all going to be in a very, very vulnerable state if we are going to think that this is an acceptable thing to do. I mean, I just know, I'm humble enough to know that mm-hmm. I have probably upset people on my journey of life. I worked in public service. And who's to say that if we now decide that people can be taken out of their graves, tombstones can be knocked down, who's to say that someone won't decide when I'm buried that they have a legitimate grievance against me and they'll come and take me out of my grave and cremate me and scatter me to the sea? And I am very, very fearful if we think that in any way that we have the right to do this. Bishop Casey has died. All those people that maybe, you know, they have died, they have faced the ultimate judge that we all have to face at the end of time. And I just, as a human being, as a Catholic, as a Christian, I am prepared to face God. You know, I want him to be the final arbitrator. Now, I know I'm speaking, you know, I haven't suffered at the hands of anyone in the church, so maybe I'm coming from that privileged position. But I just think that I'm just very fearful of the road we're going on if we're going to, as human beings, decide to judge each other.
Deirdre? What do you think of that, that we cannot all be judge? None of us can be judge.
I would say, I mean, I think the first thing is with Canon Fogarty's headstone, it was the wording on it that was so inappropriate. And how would I put it? In human life, we have a need for justice. And it's sort of, you know, it's balancing that, and that is really important. And you know, it's yes, we will all upset other people. None of us is perfect, but we're talking about one of the worst crimes that a human being can do to somebody else, to a little child. So it's not just upsetting somebody, it's something much more massive than that. And I mean, I think, you know, it's like, you know, but, you know, we've got to tread that path between not sort of, there's, what's the word I'm looking for? We've got to protect people as well. Okay. And and if crimes have been committed, then, you know, people have got to be kept safe. And, otherwise we could end up down the avenue of anarchy where anything goes and nobody is called to account for what they've done.
And Mary, do you accept, and it doesn't apply, I know you're making an analogous statement to yourself, but obviously it doesn't, it doesn't fully apply, but do you accept that as confreres, both in two dioceses and indeed in the Vatican, believe he was guilty? Mary, that Eamon Casey was guilty?
I'm not in a position to be the judge and jury.
I'm in a position to read out the statements from Galway and Limerick, saying they completely and totally believe.
I appreciate that.
The fact.
But I don't think the solution is that we continue to kind of pile, you know, pain upon pain upon pain, revenge. I don't know. I just think it's a dangerous, very dangerous road.
Yeah, okay, I understand that. But Mary, Deirdre, in fairness to her earlier on, said the reason she took down the headstone, and I know she demolished it, she had it demolished with a sledgehammer, was to the headstone honoured him, the Dermot Fogarty. The removal of the headstone honoured the victims.
Mm-hmm.
And it's the removal of the remains of Eamon Casey. It's not a big job. It's an open crypt. Well, it's locked. It's a metal gate, but it is open for visitation at certain times. It's completely accessible. His remains could be removed this afternoon and placed somewhere else in the interim until this meditative period of tranquility, reflection and consideration and thoughtfulness and mindfulness that the Diocese of Galway has suddenly entered is completed whenever it's completed. But it's to help the victims that they are believed, and they are believed by the church.
But they are, and they have been believed by the church.
But your point is, which so many people bring up,
mm-hmm.
and that is, oh, he was never convicted.
No, well, I'm not saying that. I'm not.
I'm making the point
that if we human beings are deciding to be judge and jury on each other, that we are
No society mm-hmm. can exist without jurisprudence. No civil society can exist without laws and people to assess those laws, the transgression of those laws, or otherwise.
But at the moment, we're talking about someone who has died and has been buried and has now faced the ultimate judge of all.
Mary, that's your belief. And I respect your belief.
It is my belief.
That is not the belief of everybody.
I can't speak for people whose belief it is not. I'm ringing in to honour my own belief, and I think that my belief is a belief that's held by very, very many people.
Not as many as used to hold it in Ireland. I think that's not being helped by
The constant barrage against the media, against the church. And I'm not saying I know everything has to be exposed. I'm not afraid of exposing wrong and all that. But I think it's perpetuating. I don't think it helps the pain of the people. I think the only thing that will help is love and forgiveness and some form of reconciliation.
Yeah, what about forgetfulness? Would that help?
No, I'm not advocating forgetfulness.
But you're saying there's too much talk of it.
Well, I'm not saying there's too much talk. I'm saying there's maybe a lot of talk. And I don't know if that constant negative talk achieves.
You're judging it as a negative because you don't believe it. Talk can either be positive or negative. But it is, once it's the truth and people's truth.
Patricia Donovan
was a victim of her uncle, Bishop Eamon Casey. Mm-hmm.
Not Patricia, and I started my conversation by saying that I'm speaking from a different perspective, that I have not been a victim,
But you are a human. You are a human.
I can empathise with victims, and I can empathise with all human beings. We're all people who fail. We all need mercy. We all need compassion. We all need love. And those are the things, the end of the day, that will heal.
And do you think Bishop Eamon Casey...
I don't think breaking headstones, exhuming bodies, throwing them out on the sea. I just don't think that is going to heal anyone.
And do you think Bishop Eamon Casey failed, or he made a choice to abuse his position to engage in criminal acts? That's not simply a lapse of judgment. That is a decision.
Well, I can't speak for the man. I just can't speak for the man. I'm not on air to speak for Bishop Casey.
I know that. Or to speak for him
or speak against him or anything like that. I'm just speaking about the road that we that your particular program seems to have taken in the last week of just thinking that we can just decide who will be next, who will be exhumed next, you know, and whose headstone will be knocked down next, you know.
There's no headstone be knocked down in Ireland, as far as
well. That was the gist of the conversation.
Maybe, Mary, if we took taking down headstones of abusers in Ireland, we'd have to get a company like BAM or CISC to do it.
Such would be the enormity
of the job. Deirdre McCormack, and I'll let Mary come back.
Thank you very much, Mary. I made it very short.
I really appreciate it. Deirdre, last word to you, that this is pointless. Let it be. The judge, if you're a Catholic, the judge, your ultimate judge is in the next life, not this life. These are failings. We all have failings.
Well, I think we also need, and the church is a place we turn to for moral leadership. And I come back to doing nothing is not giving moral leadership.
Okay.
I would also say, you know, talk about forgiveness. I went to, years ago, a priest made a fabulous sermon that I've never forgotten, and it was about how justice enables forgiveness and how, you know, that when somebody has been wronged, you can't just say to them, you need to forgive the person. There needs to be a process of justice. And, I mean, it's like, you know, Jesus talking about if you've stolen something, you know, you've got to go and return it.
Okay. Des O'Halloran, finally to you. Have you a view on the, I know that's not the topic of your contribution, but have you a view on Bishop Eamon Casey? And he was Bishop of Kerry, which you're based, I don't know what religion you are or whatever. But have you a view on the interment of Bishop Eamon Casey in the crypt in Galway Cathedral?
Well, again, it's a very controversial matter. Mm. There's a lot of emotional feeling gone into both sides on this one. Personally, if he's there by right, by way of the Catholic Church, in regard to his place with other bishops, fine. But perhaps there should be just some indication that he was actually a defrocked priest as such.
Yeah.
So maybe he should be separated from the others, but leave him where he is, I would say.
Okay.
The concept of removing it and spreading it in the ocean... No, it's a bit drastic.
Okay. Des O'Halloran, Guramina Market, and Deirdre McCormack, thank you so much for your contact. Joe at RT.ie.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Millie Walsh, Millie, are you still there?
Lifeline is on the line.
Come in, Millie. Ah, Millie, this is Millie Walsh down the Maxall Garage on Dublin Road in Mullingar. We spoke to Millie. The last time we spoke to Millie was in December last year, and he took over the programme and he was raising money for the Kidney Association. He's a great character in Mullingar. But I'm told, can you hear me now, Millie?
How are things?
How are you?
Not bad, Joe. How are you keeping? Thanks very much for taking the time to call me, Joe. How are you keeping?
Is this your last day?
Yeah, Joe, yeah. And there was a big celebration out here today. It's still going on outside, Joe. And I've been honest, the fool me, I wasn't expecting it.
Okay.
I wasn't expecting it at all, and I apologise for delaying you the last time. It is a little bit of help.
Not at all. You only took over. You only took 75 minutes of the program. And Millie, why are you retiring?
Well, Joe, being honest, I'm heading for 73.
Yeah.
And 40 years, Joe, with a fantastic company, Joe. I can't, that's the sadness.
Max,
I cannot
out, yeah.
praise them enough. And I mean that, Joe. I cannot praise them enough.
Okay.
Be honest, the McMullins and Maxall, as I probably said to you before,
you
I
did,
started
yeah.
with them. And they had 68 service stations throughout the island of Ireland, and now there's 347, I think.
Incredible, incredible. Now, and along, you're 73. What age were you when you started working?
Well, I was 11, or sorry, 13.
13.
I was right out of school, Joe. Looking up next, I didn't know that.
So you're 60 years of working.
And yeah, 6 years working. I was a telegram boy, I was a messenger boy, for God's sake, I was an Oliver Twist going round. Yeah.
I think you're an artful dodger going round, Millie.
Well, I got away with it, didn't I?
Yeah, you sure did. And Millie, just to again describe what is, until today, the day of your retirement, what was your daily routine?
So my daily routine, Joe, is every morning I get up at 6 o'clock every morning.
Yeah.
And I say a few prayers, drink a pint of water.
Yeah.
And eat a small bit of porridge. I bring a big bowl of porridge into work with me. I recommend anyone to eat porridge if they want a long life.
Okay.
Yeah. And I come in then. I only live out the back. I open here at 6:30 and 6:30 in the mornings.
Good man.
And I work then till 6:30 in the evenings.
Gosh.
And I go home then at 6:30.
Yeah.
I go to bed at 9:30 for an hour.
Okay.
And I come back in here at 10:40, and we close at 11:30, and I leave at 12:30.
And what, you go back home? Yeah. What time do you go to bed at?
I'm in bed at 10:50, and I'm up at 6:00. I drink a bottle of Guinness before I go to bed, but I probably give up that.
So,
because you're feeding myself anyway.
And Millie, is that every day? Is that your routine?
Every day, yeah.
Surely you must take a day off.
No wonder the wife threw me out, Joe, 22 years ago.
Do you take a day?
I had a fantastic wife and advice. And Joe,
okay.
Thanks ever so much for taking the time to read my daughter's book.
Yeah, it's a lovely book.
She really appreciates it. And I will have to admit the truth to you, Joe. Her sales went through the roof.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Our salesman,
brilliant.
I really, and thanks very much for the lovely letter you sent her.
Okay, and was the money still in it, Millie?
She really appreciated it, so she
okay.
did.
Okay, that's all. Millie, stay with us, stay with us.
We're still trying to find the money for her.
Stay with us, Millie. We need to take a break and back to you after this break to say goodbye.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Millie Walsh is retiring from his running the Maxall Garage on the in Mullingar, the Dublin Road there into Mullingar. Millie, have you got any nice gifts or presents from people?
For God's sake, Joe, my mouth, the stuff that's coming in is unreal, what's coming in the door. I really don't deserve all what's coming in.
And
Joe,
what are you, apart from large bottles of stout, what are you getting?
There's gifts coming in, there's envelopes coming in.
Oh,
it'll be about 6 months' time by the time I get them all open.
Well done.
I might get you to advertise for somebody to come down and take a job opening letters for me.
And what are you going to do?
What are you looking for?
I know you look after your beautiful daughter. Well, what are you going to do? What are you looking forward to doing?
We did put all up online that instead of presents and gifts to donate towards the Irish kidney. And that's going very, very odd. People are more than generous, Joe.
Okay.
People are very, very generous. The amount of money that's coming into that. We won't build the children's hospital, but it'll go a good bit further, along the way for the Irish kidney. That's where we're sending it to, you know.
And you know who's singing for you in the background? God rest them.
Oh, Lord, one of the best.
Yeah. Come on, Millie.
Would you believe the job I'm going to, Joe? Are you there?
Yes, I am.
The job I'm going to, and I was honoured to be asked by our administrator here, Reverend Father Gaffney, and our Bishop, Bishop Tom Deanahan, would I consider going sarcasm in the local church?
Ah, well done. Well
and
done.
Joe Dolan's niece, I tell you one thing, she'd be very, very hard to replace. She done a brilliant job.
Oh, you're taking over. Not brilliant. You're taking over. Okay. As they all say to you in Mullingar Beyond, it's you, Millie.
It's you. Oh, yeah, bye, Joe. You're not too slow.
Millie, good health, good health.
Joe, thanks ever so much for taking the time.
Good
and
man.
And whoever down the money, I will give be. Me a call in St. Paul.
I will be. Thomas Norton, Tom Norton on sound, Andrew McDermott, BCO, Richard Stearns, a producer, Annette Egan, series producer, and Catherine Thomas is next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Harry Curry. The outlook just got even brighter with further reductions all summer. In-store or at harrycurry.com.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815 or send your WhatsApp voice notes to 087 484 8888.